right, we are going to start the Wednesday, March 20th, 2024 Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee meeting, hearing. The time is 3:09. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. A quorum is not quite yet present, but we're going to get going anyways. We really don't need to actually take any votes until we come up to, I believe, number 8 and number 11 on the agenda. So we can go ahead and start hearing these bills, most of which are destined to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, which we will see on Friday, which will be posted tomorrow. And Senator Krasinski will get a sneak preview tonight. All right. So with that, we will welcome Senator Muhammad to the Transportation Committee to present Senate File 3526. Welcome to Transportation, Senator Muhammad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back. And I can just get started.
Just proceed whenever you are ready.
Sounds good. Members of the committee, before you, Senate File 3526, a bill empowering cities to designate lands for pedestrian use. Rather than imposing mandates, this bill offers cities increased flexibility and local autonomy in creating pedestrian malls. Providing cities with a broad toolkit is paramount for enhancing residents' quality of life and fostering economic growth. Currently, only cities of the first class are allowed to develop pedestrian malls and only along central business corridors. This bill seeks to broaden their scope, enabling them to explore diverse locations for such initiatives. It's essential to emphasize that if a city determines a pedestrian mall isn't conducive to its needs, it retains the ability to abstain from implementation. This legislation only allows local control members. It's important to note that pedestrian malls must be confined to a local city streets, ensuring no disruption to major highways or county roads. And Mr. Chair, I have one testifier with me. I appreciate you for hearing the bill, and I know we'll continue to work with members of the committee as well.
Thank you, Senator Muhammad. Welcome, Mr. Huser. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Huser. I'm a government relations representative for the city of Minneapolis. I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and thank Senator Muhammad for carrying it for the city. As Senator Muhammad said, this bill will expand the authority to all cities and not just cities of the first class, as the current authority is. The bill would allow for these pedestrian malls to be created in areas outside of a central business district. Currently, the city of Minneapolis interprets that central business district to mean the downtown area of the city. So we would like the ability to consider these pedestrian malls in all parts of the city on city right-of-way. As the senator said, this is permissive language and would not require any city to take action or do this in their city. We would follow all local processes, so all of the meetings and collaboration with local businesses and with residents would be required per local processes, and be plenty of opportunity for local input if these were to be implemented. One question that may come up, is who else is asking for this authority? And I think one part of the answer to that question is likely that this underlying statute, with it being only for cities of the first class, this is just not something that's even possible for all cities at this time. And so this would allow for, other conversations to happen that aren't currently happening because of the underlying statute. I want to point out that there are provisions in the bill that would not allow for the continued use of MSA funds if a pedestrian mall was to be implemented on a current MSA system part of the street. I want to also point out that there's provisions in the bill that require that there would be coordination with other road jurisdictions should the city right-of-way interact with county or state highway right-of-way. And with that, Mr. Chair, I just want to again thank the senator for carrying the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Huser. First, let me announce that in accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's hearing: Senator Herr from St. Paul, Minnesota, and a quorum is present. All right, questions, members? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Muhammad, again, I have some concerns with this as it's come through state government. I've been working with Mr. Huser and Senator Muhammad to relieve some of those issues. Again, the big thing that we were obviously concerned about is the reduction of lane miles and the highway user DAX distribution fund money that eventually was, or that could have been used originally, that's now being gone away by eliminating those right-of-ways. I struggle with it a little bit because of that, but I also have my mayor hat on the background of local control, so I understand both sides of that. So again, we're going to continue to work on the bill to hopefully get a couple things addressed by Friday by the time the omnibus bill is done. But that's my basic concern that we're addressing is, you know, reducing these lane miles and really kind of impeding the traffic flow that's existing already with vehicular traffic. And we don't want to try and change that to a lesser extent to make sure people can get through our communities and things like that. And vehicle traffic, we've talked about emergency vehicles as well, which I think we're going to address there. But that's some of our overall concerns. And I thank you, Senator Muhammad and Mr. Huser, for working on those with us. So we won't go on and on. We have a lot of bills today, so I don't argue too many points. I think you understand my points. I voiced those concerns to Senator Dibble, so we're working on those. So with that, we'll hopefully get a little bit more movement by Friday, and look forward to continuing on with the rest of the bills today. So thank you.
And thank you, Senator Jasinski. Appreciate your bringing those concerns, and you brought them to me earlier, which I also appreciated. And I've also made the commitment, and I've spoken with Senator Muhammad. We will either address them as they go into the omnibus, or we'll address them during markup on Friday for sure. Senator Muhammad, do you have anything to add or a response?
Yeah, thank you so much for working with me and Steve. We'll continue to work with you and make sure we get it in the best shape possible.
And of course, Senator Jasinski, we share the concern about utilization of, particularly within the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the Trunk Highway Fund dollars. So keep an eye on that together. We are the Trunk Highway Fund police right here. All right. All right. So, members, any other questions, comments, amendments? All right. With that, we will lay Senate File 3526 on the table for consideration in a future omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator Muhammad. Senator Kupick, welcome. We have two bills from Senator Kupick. One of them we actually dealt with last year, so we're revisiting a conversation. So Senate File 4349, which we didn't have last year. Welcome. And you have an amendment, Senator Kupick, is that true?
Yes.
All right. So Senator Kupick offers a delete everything amendment, the A1. Senator Jasinski, would you like to offer the A1?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Jasinski offers the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Kupick.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while you did not hear this bill last year, in a way you did hear this bill last year. So we are building off of a bill we did pass last year that to lower the age for some of the drivers. For last year, it was around propane. So this year, we're extending that out to other fuels. We have a workforce shortage, and this is maybe just one small way that we can help address that workforce shortage. So do you have testifiers here, too, who could speak a little bit more to this? The amendment was to kind of get in alignment with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Department of Public Safety, around a couple of issues. So that is kind of where we're at.
Great. Looks like your test fire just swapped out. So
yeah,
is this Mr. Gross?
Just to clarify, you were discussing Senate File.
We started
927 is what you were discussing. So
well, we started with 4349, correct?
So then we need Tim back.
4349.
Right.
Yes.
I was using what we did last year. on a similar.
All right.
And then we'll get to the other one.
Very good. All right. So, Mr. Gross, to Senate File 4349. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Gross. I'm the executive director of Fueling Minnesota. We represent, we're a trade association that represents the 400 licensed fuel distributors that get the fuel from the terminals, refineries, pipelines to the end user, the retailer, and the end user. Senate File 4349 is an extension of legislation passed last session that redefines what fuel products can be included in a regional emergency declared by the President of the United States, which extends the allowable hours a fuel driver can drive during the finite limited emergency period.
I have it backwards.
Recent past emergencies have included extreme weather occurrences like flooding, tornadoes, hurricanes, pipeline distributions like Colonial Pipeline, refinery interruptions like a fire occurring in the refinery in Illinois and Chicago area that affected fuel supplies all across the Midwest. What the current statute does, it allows the state of Minnesota to recognize the fuel, the federal emergency declaration. Specifically, what Senate File 4349 does is includes all fuel products that may be described in the Federal Emergency Declaration, which are defined in Minnesota Statute 296A.01. The additions would include fuel products like gasoline and diesel. Further language was also included to address the concerns of stakeholders and the agencies to ensure the emergency declaration is used in a way that tackles the emergency directly and that only fuels products described in the Federal Emergency Declaration are included in the hours of service exemption. I would like to thank Senator Kubik for bringing this bill forward and the Minnesota Department of Transportation and Department of Public Safety for their help developing this important legislation. And thank you, Chair Dibble, and the members for allowing their time to share this good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Senator Cooper.
And Mr. Chair, yes, I have totally rearranged the numbers of these bills or rearranged them around. So, yes, right. This is what we're building off of. And the other one will come up. So,
very good. All right. Excellent. All right. Members, questions, comments, or amendments? All right. Seeing none, we will lay Senate File 4349 on the table.
Thank you, Senator.
As amended for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. I don't know if I need to tap the gavel for that or not, but I'll do it just to be sure. All right, Senate File 927.
Yes, and right. 927 is the bill you heard last year, and we thought it was such a good idea that it passed out onto the floor, but then never left the floor, so it is back here under Rule 47 to possibly get a second hearing and hopefully be included in your omnibus bill. So this one will lower the age from 21 down to 18 for people who are driving propane delivery trucks, help with a workforce shortage, and I do have a test fire.
I just can't get away from propane today. I was just in Energy Committee. So we have an A1 amendment, Senator Kupek. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I have the A1 amendment. I had an A1 amendment for the last one and another A1 amendment.
Senator Lang, would you like to offer the A1 amendment? All right. All in favor of the A1, say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. All right. All right. So if you're done presenting the bill, we can move to a testimony. Mr. Wagner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Dave Wager, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Propane Association. I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 927. My organization represents 352 member companies throughout Minnesota. Current law in Minnesota allows 18 to 21-year-old drivers to transport petroleum products intrastate in a motorized tank truck of less than 3,500 gallons. This is known as a bulk package. We're asking for a change in state statute that will allow 18 to 21-year-old trained and licensed employees to expand their job duties to include the transportation of non-bulk packages. Bulk package delivery, typically a delivery truck, tends to be seasonal work, whereas non-bulk packages can be delivered whenever needed. The packages I'm referring to today are propane storage tanks used for homes, farms, and businesses. They include tanks and cylinder exchanges at convenience stores and home stores and many other businesses. These tanks are used for grilling, camping, and other outdoor activities. They're used for fuel tanks or forklifts to support manufacturing and distribution. Generators are used in emergencies or remote sites, plus many more uses. Propane is also typically the fuel of choice for backup power generation, heat, and cooking in emergencies or remote sites. To use propane, propane tanks must be delivered to the point of use as non-bulk packages. I don't know if it's in your handout, but you should have pictures there. It's just two pictures. It's just currently can drive as a propane truck with a bulk package. The other picture is a cylinder delivery truck where they deliver to a convenience store. So note that the bulk package, an 18 to 21 year old can drive, the non-bulk, an 18 to 21 year old cannot drive. These two trucks are relatively the same size and the license and training requirements are the same. They're hauling the same product, it's just packaged differently. Our members willingly train their employees to ensure they are properly certified to drive either truck, and again, but only 18 to 21 year olds can drive one of them. Changing state statutes to allow this group to transport non-bulk packages will enable our members to recruit people graduating from high school with full-time employment offers. According to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, 30% of high school graduates do not enroll in post-secondary education. Propane use is not exclusive to rural Minnesota. It can be found in every county, city, and municipality in the state. In a matter of weeks, an individual can be in a full-time position with good pay and benefits. Approximately 1,500 people are in direct employment related to propane in Minnesota, and many job openings exist today. These jobs pay an average salary of nearly $58,000. Propane's economic impact in Minnesota is more than $1.5 billion, and we serve approximately 420,000 residential, agricultural, commercial, and industrial accounts. So in closing, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Kupak, and Senator Jasinski for carrying this bipartisan bill.
Thank you, Mr. Wager. I have Nancy Selesky on the list. Nope. Okay, great. All right. Thank you. Questions, members? Questions, comments, or amendments? All right. Thank you, Senator Kupik. Mr. Wager?
Thank you.
With that, we will lay Senate File 927 as amended on the table for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. All right. Senator Carlson is in Judiciary. Senator McEwen is here. We interrupted her late lunch. Sorry about that. Senator McEwen is joining us for 4926.
Yes.
Welcome to your committee, Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, it's my pleasure today to present to you Senate File 4926, which deletes language in current statute giving the authority to tow a car if that car has 5 unpaid parking tickets on record. The 5-ticket provision was placed into state statute years ago. Today, state and local governments have far greater tools to capture payment of unpaid fines and fees, including parking tickets. This includes imposing a wage levy for payment, garnishment of bank accounts or other accounts, revenue capture of tax refunds, and property tax liens. First, I just want to make sure that people are very clear on what the bill doesn't do. The bill does not restrict ability to tow for a wide range of prohibitions in statute, including parking in an emergency lane, for snow emergencies, et cetera, as outlined in current statute. Nothing changes that. It also does not make any changes to debt collection processes. Minnesota has an array of more effective debt collection tools to hold people accountable, as noted previously. So, members, why is the bill necessary? Parking ticket debt-based towing is ineffective at best and counterproductive at worst. The unnecessary loss of a vehicle for Minnesotans has immediate, extremely negative economic outcomes and can result in job loss and major disruptions to child care or education. And a couple of statistics for people to know that I think are important. 82% of Minnesotans use a car to commute to work. So the car being told is a major disruption in their lives. And 30% of households have only one vehicle. So that's about one out of every three Minnesotans. One have only one vehicle in their household. Studies show that costly, unrealistic fines and fees lead to people not paying anything, in fact. In Minneapolis, recovery of a vehicle towed due to parking ticket debt requires a lump sum payment of all parking ticket fines as well as towing fees. For parking tickets that have gone to collections, this could easily mean paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars all at once. Furthermore, audits have shown that cities lose rather than recover money when using non-essential and debt-related towing. Minnesota is leading on eliminating ineffective debt collection practices in transportation. Senate File 4926 builds on recent legislation that has modernized the state by eliminating driver's license suspension for unpaid fines and fees and reforms made last session to towing statutes. And with that, Mr. Chair, member and members, Anna Odegaard from the Fines and Fees Justice Center is here to testify in support of the bill.
Welcome, Ms. Odegaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Anna Odegaard, and I'm a senior advocacy and campaign strategist with the Fines and Fees Justice Center. FFJC, as we call it, is a national hub for information, advocacy, and collaboration for reform of fines and fees, including eliminating onerous consequences that result from non-payment of fines and fees, such as towing a car for unpaid parking tickets. We support Senate File 4926, and we are grateful to the Justice Action Network and Legal Aid for their leadership on this issue. Towing a car for unpaid parking fines is a disproportionate response to a minor violation with potentially devastating consequences, not only for the individual responsible for the parking tickets, but often for the entire family. As Senator McEwen pointed out, 30% of Minnesota households rely on a single vehicle, which means impounding that vehicle makes life nearly impossible by complicating access to employment, school, medical appointments, even getting groceries. This hardship is most severe for those at the lower end of the income spectrum, who, not coincidentally, are also those least likely to have access to private parking, especially at their home, and most likely to struggle to find the extra dollars in their budget to pay a parking ticket. Retrieving a vehicle after it's towed is expensive. Again, as Senator McEwen pointed out, on average, if a car is impounded for 3 days and then retrieved, it costs over $600 to retrieve that vehicle. For most families, that's a significant expense. For poor families, it's often impossible, which can lead to the permanent loss of their vehicle. A study in California found that cars towed for the reasons most associated with poverty, like unpaid tickets or lapsed registration, are 2 to 5 times more likely never to be retrieved than those average towed cars. Towing is also unnecessary if the goal is accountability for ticket payment. I was going to go into the ways that the state of Minnesota has of collecting on unpaid fines and fees, but Senator McEwen did that comprehensively, so I will skip that part of my testimony and just say that we can enforce accountability without disrupting the livelihood, schooling, and general functioning of an entire household. So let's end towing for parking ticket collections, and I'd like to thank our author, Senator McEwen, and the committee for the opportunity to testify.
Thanks, Ms. Odegaard. Members, questions, comments, or amendments? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator McEwen. Again, I have a little bit of concern with this one. I'm not going to live or die over it by any means, but I just, you know, we keep to be loosening penalties, and if we have these new ways to collect the debts with property wage or property tax liens and wage, obviously it's not happening because we're taking this off. So if it's so much better, why are we taking the five off and why are we making it unlimited? At least, you know, maybe go from 5 to 10 or something like that. I get that. But at some point, you have to have some more leverage to get them to pay. And you can get a judgment. I get that. But collecting that judgment is tougher and tougher. And again, I think unlimited is just way too far expansive. I mean, at some point, you have to pay the fine. And I think, as you said, stated, that there's better ways to collect these. But if we're still not collecting them, why are we taking that off? So just my concerns, again, I'm not going to live or die over it, but I get concerned about, we just keep loosening penalties, and it's like license tabs. We're seeing a decrease in people renewing their license tabs because we're not enforcing it as much, and now our fees are going down and we're having less money for our roads and bridges. So I just, you know, have a concern with keep loosening these penalties. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Piquion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Jasinski, for the conversation. I hear what you're saying, but I would actually argue that what we're doing is being smarter about the consequences. What we detailed here today and what the evidence shows when we look at the studies about how this actually functions is that it's really counterproductive to actually collecting, to actually holding people accountable for their tickets. So when we're making things actually harder for people in their everyday lives, when we have all of these tools now that we can use to collect unpaid fines, I think sometimes we get stuck in old habits of the way that we had been enforcing things before we had these tools. And it's understandable that in some municipalities are still doing this as just sort of out of a force of habit. But there's better ways to do it now that are much less disruptive to families in Minnesota. And so I think that we should just be smarter about it.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Certainly. Senator Jasinski.
So again, going back, so why unlimited? I just think unlimited is way too high of a number. I can see going from 5 to 10 or something like that, but to basically make it unlimited, that there's no ways to collect after that point, I guess, you know, why would we not go up and increase the number? I mean, again, if I've not paid one, not paid two, not paid three, not paid four, not paid five tickets, at some point, you got to collect these fines and you have to pay these fines. And again, you're going from 5 to unlimited. That's just a huge increase. So again, why are we not looking at increasing it from 5 to 10? Since you do have these new way to collect, you know, let's just raise the bar a little bit and give a little bit more leniency, but not make it unlimited, would be my concern.
Thank you. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe there's another thought that I'd like to maybe propose, and that thought is a time frame. Because you did mention the lump sum that could be, a huge financial burden to a single family with one car or whatever it may be. But if you have five tickets, and if those five tickets were in 5 days, I think that would be a huge financial burden. If those five tickets were over the course of 6 months, over the course of a year, then maybe I think an individual, if it's a year past due, I think that maybe has something where it's a little more relevant, maybe a little more realistic when it comes to the amount we're talking about. I don't know if it necessarily has anything to do with the amount of tickets, but the money they represent. Maybe, just maybe, the Transportation Committee could come together and say, yeah, maybe it's a year ago parking ticket. You have no intention of paying it. Maybe that's the guiding principle. Not so many, how many tickets you have. I don't know. Just a thought, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Do we have any other? All right, would anyone else like to respond or comment or offer an amendment? Any final words, Senator McKeown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, thank you very much for the conversation. I appreciate it. I think there's something sort of visceral about wanting some satisfaction that towing, like at some point, has to be the answer. I think that what the evidence tells us is that it is just not. It's just not the answer. It's just not the best way to do this for unpaid parking tickets. And it disproportionately hurts the people who can afford it the least. So respectfully, I ask for your support, and I'd love to continue the conversation about these issues. Thank you.
Great. I appreciate your willingness to continue the conversation, Senator McKeown. With that, do we make an amendment to this one? So with that, we will lay Senate File 4926 on the table for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator McKeown. Senator Matthews is with us. Next up, for Senate File 4641. Welcome to the committee, Senator Matthews. Please proceed as you so choose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing Senate File 4641, a bill that would allow school districts and school bus contractors to install supplemental warning systems on school buses. These lights are more visible to drivers and provide better safety for crossing students. The Department of Public Safety has been involved in drafting this legislation to ensure that the provisions comply with federal school bus law. And I'm ready to turn it over to my testifiers. I'm joined today by Brad Lundell, representing the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, and Tom Rossley, the transportation coordinator for the Becker School District, who my understanding is online today. Thank you.
That's correct. So welcome, Mr. Lundell. Please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brad Lundell. I'm representing the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation today. I really want to thank Senator Matthews for carrying Senate File 4641 and for Chair Dibble and the committee for hearing the bill. The discussion of this system has started taking place in 2018. It finally made it across the finish line as part of the 2021 transportation bill that was passed in the special session in 2021. That created a pilot project that would allow districts to use the supplemental lighting system. That pilot project expired on August 1st, 2022. The Becker School District expressed an interest and then was surprised to find that it was a pilot project and not state law, ongoing state law. So this would make it ongoing state law by lifting the sunset on the pilot project and having districts able to move forward using the supplemental lighting systems. I think that this committee has always shown a strong interest in stop arm violations. It's always school bus safety and it's a bipartisan support for this over the years by using stop arm cameras was one thing that was talked about. Also the efforts with training and public safety announcements to help train the public on that. This is just another step in this process. And I think it's a very, very positive way. Every year, the DPS does a one-day spot check on stop arm violations. Last year, it was 527 on one day. You take that times about 175 or 180, how many days that school kids are being transported, you're looking at about 90,000 violations per year. That's simply unacceptable, and this is, again, not going to eliminate all 90,000, but anything we can do to lessen stop arm violations is something that we would greatly welcome in the school bus industry. I think Tom Risley from Becker is online and will talk about what their plans are with the supplemental lighting system.
Welcome, Mr. Risley. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through loud and clear, and we can see you too.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to introduce myself, and then we had a video that I wanted to show, but we had issues downloading it. So I do have some pictures that I do want to show here in a minute. I'm Tom Risley, a retired Mass Chief Petty Officer of the Navy for 30 years. I'm also been in pupil transportation for 36 years. In central Minnesota. I currently am the transportation director for Becker Public Schools for the last 9 years. And so everybody knows I do drive every AM and PM route because of the due shortage of drivers right now. So I do want to take this time to thank each and every one of you to allow me to speak on behalf of the safety of our students in the state of Minnesota. I'm going to try to share this because it was impossible to share it when we were just in test mode. I don't think it's going to allow.
Mr. Risley, I think our committee administrator, Ms. Ethier, can do so for you. So hang on 1 second here.
Okay, that would be great.
Thank you. All right. Can you see that, Mr. Risley? We have some photos up.
Yes, I can. Can we back those up? We'll go all the way to the beginning. We just want to, for that one right there, so for Becker Public Schools, we currently cover 148 square miles. 48 regular routes daily, 14 special ed routes. We currently have 50 total vehicles, including school bus and type 3 vehicles. We make, just in Becker alone, 1,095 bus stops per day. Our vehicles are traveling 1,662 miles per day. We currently have scheduled 2,535 students of our total student staff or student population of 3,029 students for Becker Public Schools as of today. Our stop arm violations as of the 23-24 school year through today so far is 44 stop arm violations turned into the law enforcement for prosecution. We do also did the stop arm grant twice. All of our buses are equipped through that grant with 5 school bus stop camera systems. And those have become a very good reactive play to catch a lot of these violations. We are looking at to be more proactive. Currently right now, during that temporary period for the supplementary lights, Becker Public Schools, while I've been here, we have put 10 of these systems on 32 of our school buses that we operate. We strategically place those on routes that have higher impact with bus stop violations, and they have proven over and over because of visibility at the eye level to reduce those stop arm violations. The last cost that we had, because this is chosen by the district, was $1,060 for the 4 light system being installed. The lights itself was only about $450. So if I had my shop staff do it and install it, it's quite a bit cheaper. You'll see on this picture that's being shown right now, the one to the left has the upper red, and then you'll notice the lower red. These are the same as our refuge and garbage trucks have, except they're yellow all the time and they're traveling down the road. I just happened to see this as I was thinking about this, and I was presented to talk in behalf of Becker Public Schools, and I was driving at 5:30 down Highway 10, and I saw a refuge truck driving with their lights, their yellow flashes, lights on, the strobes, to distinguish their vehicles so they don't get rear-ended. All I'm asking is for us to simply take that sunset date away to allow districts to choose that. I am also a member of the MAPT in this region, and I've shared this with all the transportation directors, and several have shown an interest, if we do pass that, to actually start implementing some of this as another tool to reduce those stop arm violations. Lastly, us at Becker just want our school district to be proactive with technology to prevent stop arm violations for the safety of all students, assets, and surrounding motorists. I do want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen.
Thank you, Mr. Risley. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 4641? All right. Members, questions, comments, or amendments? All right. Senator Matthews, any final words?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your consideration of the bill. I appreciate one of the school districts in my district for bringing this forward, showing how they want to try to use this to improve their student safety, and would encourage support for this bill moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Matthews. All right. Much appreciated. Oh, we will lay Senate File 4641 on the table for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. We have Senator Nelson with us. Welcome to the committee, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we started our day together in taxes. Now we're ending our day together in transportation.
Oh, my day's not ending. I bet yours isn't either.
Yeah, no, I've got quite a bit more to go, too. Yeah. I've got the much-beloved Judiciary Committee to present a bill in yet tonight, so lucky me. All right, Senator Nelson, Senate File number 727.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 727 sets the threshold establishment for the accident prevention courses. I should say it changes that course requirement from 8 hours for the initial training, and then it changes that to 4 hours for the initial training. Just as I'm sure all of your members know, this has to do with the discount, the safe driver's discount for seniors, those 55 and over. And current law requires there be an initial 8-hour course followed by every 3 years a 4-hour refresher course. The bill before you would change the 8-hour initial course to 4 hours. And Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment.
All right, Senator Coleman will offer the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment simply changes the effective date from 2023 to 2024. So the bill
it also strikes Senator Nelson. It strikes a shall and makes it a must. We are very adamant about this. Okay. No more shalls in this Minnesota code. So whenever we find them, we get rid of them. All right. I'm sorry. Proceed.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's right. I forgot about that important thing. And I understand that is the reviser's modus of operandi now. So
we're
going to have this
suit. Giant bill. It's going to have all the shalls in it, and it's going to replace them all with musts in the entire Minnesota statutes.
Yes, of course. Years ago, we had lots of questions about that, didn't we?
Yes,
shall
yes.
or must. Mr. Chair, the bill just has two sections. One section does just what I said. It changes that initial training to just like all the other training, 4 hours. And then section two is the repealer, and that's the repealer of the rule that stated that there be the initial study of 8 hours for the initial study. So why are we doing this, Mr. Chair? The change will encourage more senior adults to take these courses as participation numbers have declined in states requiring 8-hour courses. Traffic deaths are on the rise for older Minnesotans. Fatal crashes have increased from 34% to 39% for the age group of 55 and above, and traffic congestion in some places is at an all-time high. One way to keep older drivers on the road safely is to maintain those safe driving skills through education. And currently, 18 states allow a course length of 4 hours, and 9 states already mandate insurance discounts for the 4-hour courses. I think this is a key point, Mr. Chair and committee members. An independent study conducted by AARP comparing the 4-hour refresher course and the 8-hour courses found that course length had no significant impact on the amount of knowledge drivers retained, and drivers were equally as likely to change 19 safe driving behaviors for the better. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's just a brief overview of the bill before us. I have two testifiers.
Great. Thank you so much, Senator Nelson. Yes, I have Mr. Vaughn and Ms. Salo. Whomever would like to go first, please just jump in and fire away. All right.
Good afternoon, and I'd like to
reintroduce yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Dave Vaughn, and my wife Deanna and I used to own the Driver Improvement Associates business. We sold this in May of 2023, so I have no vested interest in the financial aspect of this business whatsoever. But I'd like to reiterate what Senator Nelson said about older drivers being susceptible to injuries. And I'm 80 years old, and I know my driving skills weren't nearly as sharp as they were when I was 79, much less when I was maybe 59 or 29. I don't like to drive at night. Intersections bother me, et cetera, et cetera. And most older people would attest to that. But I'd like to give you some information that supports what Senator Nelson said. First of all, as we get older, we're more susceptible to injuries, and the numbers decrease or increase as you look at it as people get older. For example, if a 50-year-old gets into a car crash, the likelihood of their surviving is much better than somebody my age, and the numbers decrease as we get older. But just to reiterate what Senator Nelson was saying, Minnesota is the only state around here that offers this 10% discount, and many insurance companies will offer the discount not only on the auto liability, which is mandated by way of statute, but also on collision and comprehensive. I think that's very important to note, because many seniors, as you've heard many times, are on a fixed income, and the savings over 3 years can be hundreds of dollars with this 10% discount. The 10% is one thing, but frankly, the education and the refresher is much more important. But just to give you some information about the number of older folks that took the 8-hour class versus the 4-hour class over the last few years. For example, in the year of 2021, our organization alone, and there are many other organizations in Minnesota that offer this class, including AARP and Minnesota Highway Safety Center, we taught 1,634 individuals. 1,634. Of those 1,634, 44 took the 8-hour class. That's 3.4%. How many 70, 75, 65, 80-year-olds want to sit in an 8-hour class on a Saturday or a Sunday or a Monday or a Tuesday from 6 to 10 o'clock at night? 3.4%. In 2022, it was 7.2%, and the numbers are consistent throughout the 6 years that we've owned the business. As I mentioned earlier, my wife and I have no vested interest in this business anymore. We sold it last May, and the young lady that's running it is doing a great job. My interest is in helping older folks drive more safely. Intersections bother older people. Driving at night bothers older people. You hear all the time anecdotal stories about older folks getting into crashes. And if we can do something to alleviate this burden and these deaths, I think we should take a serious look at it. And that's why I am very much in favor of supporting the change from 8 hours to 4 hours.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And welcome to the committee, Ms. Salo, or is it Salo?
Salo.
All right, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Dribble and members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Salo, and I'm the AARP volunteer instructor here today, contrary to the agenda, which says AAA. I've been an instructor with AARP Driver Safety for 10 years, and I'm currently and have been the state coordinator for the last 5 years. I've taught over 250 classes and over 3,600 participants in Hennepin County. I'm here in support of SF File 727, a bill that reduces the 8-hour driver safety course to 4 hours, and would like to thank our author, Senator Nelson, for bringing this bill forward. Since 2018, AARP Driver Safety has helped 59,000 Minnesota drivers be safer on our roads. However, our Minnesota average participation count per course has dropped 27% since 2019. We should be doing better, and we can do better by reducing the 8-hour requirement to 4 hours for first-time attendees, especially given the aging population and the increase we're seeing in fatalities for older population, as Mr. Vaughn already mentioned. AARP survey data shows that participants are overwhelmingly satisfied with the driver safety courses. However, their only complaint was course length. Encouraging safe driving practices is our number one objective while teaching, but time constraints on everyone's schedules today, it's difficult to convince drivers to take the initial 8-hour course even with the 10% auto insurance discount. The AARP curriculum for the 4-hour refresher course and the 8-hour course are virtually the same. However, we do allow for more engagement activities and additional discussion during the 8-hour. Our instructors are always willing to spend more time after a 4-hour class to engage in further discussion. An AARP independent survey comparing 4- and 8-hour courses showed no significant impact on the amount of knowledge drivers retained. Did you know that in 1 mile in driving, we make 150 driving decisions? AARP driver safety courses aid in decision making by discussing change and our willingness to accept change as we age and continue driving. Topics of discussion include changes in ourselves as we age, updated vehicle technology, fitting in our vehicle safely, and most importantly, changes to our roadways, such as roundabouts and J-turns, and updates to driving laws. Examples of recent law discussions are the new cannabis open package law and an update to the Ted Foss move over law. These were all introduced and accepted into law in the last year's session. To help our highly trained 100-plus Minnesota volunteer instructors teach successfully, we provide a 120-page participant manual to each attendee and show 19 videos to back up our nationally and state-approved curriculum. This still leaves us time in a 4-hour course for Q&A and participant interaction. I hope this gives you a picture of the AARP Driver Safety Program and the need to reduce the 8-hour requirement to 4 hours so more older Minnesotans will participate so we can save lives and all be safer on our roads. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Salo. And I did not know that you make 150 decisions for every mile you drive, so I learn something new every day in the Minnesota Senate. And I see you have your AARP entourage supporting
yes,
you here.
We do.
Welcome,
we have several
everyone from AARP,
here today.
All the red vests. Welcome. So, with that, members, any questions or comments or amendments on Senate File 727? All right. I think there was some question about whether this has to go back to Commerce. It does not. And so, we are happy to have heard this proposal and happy to lay. Oh, any final words, Senator Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to thank you for having this before the committee. And just note that 18 other states already have the 4-hour safe driving course. Minnesota should be one of them. I think the thing to remember is that by having the 8-hour course, we're getting less participants. And our goal is to have that better education and better outcomes. So, Mr. Chair, I'm hopeful for positive steps as this moves forward. I believe the understanding with your staff was it would need to go to Commerce. But I'm going to leave that with you and your staff to determine that.
I did confer with Council, and they thought not. Mr. Greenfield.
Great.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson and members of the committee, that's correct. We've confirmed with the Commerce staff that it does not need to go to Commerce. And I'll also note for the record that the language does address rulemaking, but we've also consulted with the state and local council that does not trigger the Senate rule that would require a stop in state and local. So this is clean to proceed to be laid over without any further committee stops.
Great. I'm guessing that's welcome news, Senator Nelson.
That's very welcome news. Thank you for doing that good work.
All right. I know you're dying to have two more full-fledged conversations about 727, but
Mr. Chair,
deny you that.
Mr. Chair,
yep, Senator
could
Nelson.
I say one other thing that is just so important about this? This bill is extra special to me because my constituent, Mr. Vaughn, brought this to me 3 years ago, talking about how important this would be. And I appreciate the fact that we have so much support. others all across the state realize how important this is, and I think it'd be in our best interest if we could help keep our seniors and all other drivers safer with this. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. So we will lay Senate File 727 as amended on the table for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Thank you. All right, Senator Croon has joined us from Judiciary. I know he needs to get back to Judiciary. So, and I think, Senator Croon, we're jumping over Senate File 4813 and going to Senate File 4823. Is that correct? Thanks. All right. Welcome to the Transportation Committee, Senator Croon, Senate File 4823.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is a bill that authorizes the Department of Public Safety to use verification systems to verify the identity of participants in the Transportation Security Administration's Registered Traveler Program. Mr. Chair, this is this bill is in response to changes in federal regulations to bring Minnesota into compliance with that, so those that are enrolled in this can continue to use it. Here with me to testify is Amy Hopshin, the Vice President of Public Affairs for CLEAR.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Amy Hopshin. I'm Vice President of Public Affairs at the secure identity company CLEAR. I'm here to express our strong support for Senate File 4823. Quickly, for those of you who are not familiar with CLEAR, we're a leader in identity verification, and we've been helping the U.S. travelers speed through airport security since 2010. Our signature CLEAR lanes can be found in 56 airports nationwide, including MSP, where we've proudly been partnered since 2017. We are federally authorized through the Registered Traveler Program and are regulated by the Department of Homeland Security and TSA in collaboration with our partner airports. Under a new regulatory framework with DHS and TSA, we are bringing our enrollment processes in line with the latest international standards in digital identity, which will make CLEAR digital identity the most secure, highest standard identity at the airport. This process requires us to begin something called source corroboration, meaning that during the enrollment process, we have to verify the information on a member's identity document, whether that is a driver's license or a passport, with the appropriate issuing authority. Currently, we are able to do this with U.S. passports and driver's licenses from 47 states. Under Minnesota's existing data privacy laws, DPS is prevented from working with CLEAR in order to corroborate any driver's license from Minnesota. Enter SF-4823. It was narrowly drafted in collaboration with the Department of Public Safety and is supported by the Metropolitan Airports Commission, as well as Delta Airlines, one of our largest national corporate partners. It provides strict guardrails that will allow DPS to source corroborate driver's licenses with CLEAR, but under very sort of like limited instances. And of course, only for members who are both opting in and paying for our service. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hopshin. Questions, members? Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, you mentioned 47 states. What are the states that you don't function in?
In addition to Minnesota.
Ms. Hopshin, you have to address the chair.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the three states that we are not currently able to do source corroboration in addition to Minnesota are New Hampshire and Alaska. We're actively working with both of those states to correct that.
That means the Dakotas are ahead of us. This is not good. All right. And Iowa. Oh, my gosh. All right. Thank you. All right. Any further questions? All right. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 4823? Where's Rich Neumeister when you need him? Just
Mr.
joking.
Chair, he'll be in Judiciary.
All right. Very good. So any final words, Senator Crum?
What's that?
Any final words?
Oh, thank you. I'd just like to thank you for giving me this opportunity and appreciate your support on this bill. And I understand that it would need to get re-referred to the Judiciary Committee next.
Correct. So Senator Jasinski will move Senate File 4823 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Croon. Oh, I'm on my way to Judiciary myself, so I'll see you over there in a little
thank
bit.
You.
So, Senator Lang, are you ready to present on Senate File 4475?
That's all good. That order.
Welcome, Senator Lang.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hopefully that I won't take too much of your time. This bill that I have before you today is Senate file, I think it's 4475. It's a bill that just clarifies some changes that we made as a group with the help of Senator Newman. And there is a, I think it's in your packets, there's a letter written from Senator Newman and Representative Torkelson that for some reason is labeled Exhibit E that clarifies exactly what clarification we're putting in law and clarifies their intent back in 2017. So what it does, it just makes sure that products like the sand and the gravel and the aggregate materials that are being processed are taken from the pit to the processing plant prior to being brought to the site to be poured are being treated as such. And of course, this bill wouldn't be here if there wasn't some sort of a small problem. And the small problem is that our state patrol officers were pulling some people over saying that we're not quite following the law that the way we thought we were supposed to be following the law. So with that long-winded explanation, I think I'll turn it over to my testifier and go from there, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you, members of the Senate Committee. My name is Marty Seifert. I work with the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota. I worked on this bill back in 2017. And essentially what we're doing, members, is trying to clarify that the materials that are going to, if you think of a mixing plant, like a concrete plant, my clients, as Senator Lang said, we are taking the aggregate materials like sand, gravel, cementitious powder, and using the special permit that was passed in 2017, we're bringing it from, say, the Port of Duluth or the pits to the mixing facility, and then we don't segregate what is used necessarily in a road and what might go to, say, a sidewalk or a curb or light rail or other things that concrete is used in. And so there was some confusion in the law in that relationship. So we've been trying to work with stakeholders on keeping this as tight as possible to just what we do right now. DOT did talk to me. We're trying to work the language with them to make sure that they're at least neutral on this. And we have some language, Mr. Chair, we'll try to get to you between now and markup, which is probably like tomorrow, just to add the word aggregate on line 1.10 and cross out bulk because that's a little bit too expansive. And then to put the word aggregate in front of plant to make sure that there is no absolutely no confusion that we're not expanding the law to any new products than what we do right now. We cross out but not limited to make sure that the only products are that would be hauled would be what is in the list that you see on lines 1.8 and 1.9. We want to stick to that list. We don't want to expand that beyond that because the legislature has been very clear that with the special truck weight permit, they don't want more products unless it goes to the legislature. So we're just trying to keep it clean, clear, make sure that our drivers are not confused on what they're doing. We are, you know, we want to help with cutting down greenhouse gas emissions. So with this special permit, the trucks travel 20% less than they otherwise would. To put that in perspective for the members, when the Metrodome was demolished, if you remember that, and the Viking Stadium was demolished, there have been over 10,000 less trips back and forth of all that concrete, all that tar, asphalt that was demolished from those buildings. And that would be spewing into the atmosphere in your district, Mr. Chairman, or Senator Dietzix. I'm trying to remember where the lines go down, where the Viking Stadium are. But, you know, those there's less trucks on the road. There's less vehicle miles traveled. It's good for the environment. Our train drivers since 2017 have had no accidents, no problems with this law. But we do want to keep it crisp, clear, and tight so we can avoid as much controversy as possible. So that's what this is about.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Seifert. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 4475? Welcome to the committee.
Good
Thank you,
Welcome,
Mr. Chair. And members, Amber Backus on behalf of the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, and I'm sorry I was coming from Senate Judiciary, so I missed the opening in terms of changes that might be on the table. But I did want to mention that six of our short line members currently carry aggregate and cement in Minnesota. Another one is in the process of adding a customer who is developing a parcel along their line to haul between 500 and 1,000 rail cars of construction materials. And as the bill has at least been introduced, it makes significant changes to the economics of moving by truck versus rail, disadvantaging the short lines who have been making investments and hiring employees to haul these commodities. Another short line thinks this will handicap the movement of granite road seal coat that moves by rail from western Minnesota to the Twin Cities in favor of heavier trucks carrying that seal coat down Highway 10 from St. Cloud. So just to talk about some impacts beyond those on the short line railroads themselves, the modal change will have adverse greenhouse gas impacts if you're diverting that from railroads to trucks, as freight by rail lowers greenhouse gas emissions by up to 75% since one train can move one ton, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, and then potentially there could be increased congestion on that corridor. And then the wear and tear to bridges. I know the axles spread the weight across for regular pavement, but bridges could be an issue. So just wanted to share that, and I will look forward to hearing more about Mr. Seifert's potential changes because I was not aware of those.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. All right, would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 4475? All right, questions, members, questions, comments, or amendments? All right. Thank you so much, Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, we'll try to get the language change DOT suggested to tighten that up to your staff.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. We will lay Senate File number 4475 on the table for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. All right. So, Senator Jasinski, we're going to revisit the conversation on rotable aircraft. The real debate is it the Jetsons bill or the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang bill?
Well, we Mr. Chair, I guess I'll say what I show right all here. Right. We're going to change the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang bill this
chitty
year.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a revision. I worked with the stakeholders between MnDOT and the stakeholders as far as changes that makes it acceptable to all parties. Mr. Greenfield worked heavily on this to get this corrected, so I'm going to turn it over to him if he wants to report out the changes that gets it in the condition that the all parties are comfortable with.
Mr. Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski and members of the committee. The A3 amendment incorporates technical changes that were made when the A2 was adopted in committee to Senate File 3975 and then laid on the table. But since the A3 is the most recently adopted amendment, or would be the most recently adopted amendment, it is the controlling language. So I'm going to highlight the two changes from the A2 to the A3. Three changes. The first change is that the A3 makes a minor change to the definition of rotable aircraft found in the Aeronautics Chapter of Law, Chapter 360. This change can be found on page 4, line 16. The next change from the A3 to the A2 is a technical change that pertains to the display or the exemption from the display of license plates on rotable aircraft by placing it in the proper statutory section pertaining to the display of license plates. This can be found on page 4, line 19. And then finally, probably the most substantive change from the A2 to the A3 is the reinsertion of a prohibition language from in Chapter 360. So if you turn to page 7, lines 13 and 14, there's a new prohibition in Chapter 360, or Section 360.075, Subdivision 1, that creates a misdemeanor penalty for operating an aircraft and that takes off or lands on a road without the consent of the road owner. And that inserts also a effective date of August 1 for violations on or after that date. That was previously taken out in the A2 and then reinstated at the request of MnDOT.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Questions, members, to those changes as reflected in the A3?
All right, sure. So I'd ask for approval of the A3 or move the A3 amendment.
All right, Senator Jasinski moves the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right, and so then anything further? And would anyone else like to testify on Senate file number 3975? Final word, Senator Jasinski, and or a motion to send us on to judiciary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you for our staff to make those corrections that made the stakeholders happy. And with that, I'd ask for approval of Senate file 3475 as amended be passed and re-referred to judiciary.
39. I'm sorry, 3975.
Sorry, 3975 as amended.
All right. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So I will come to the table. Oh, sorry. Senator Carlson. I was going to like jump up there, but you're here. So why don't you take the table for Senate file number 3817.
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting, can I make one comment?
Yes.
Just wanted to thank you as the chair for allowing so many Republican bills. It's nice to see that that's done. In this committee today, there was 11 bills proposed and 6 were Republican and 5 were DFL. So it's nice to have that mix and we really do appreciate that. Yesterday, I sat through state government and there were 20 bills and not one Republican bill. So Senate Republicans really do appreciate you hearing our bills and giving them time to be heard in committee. So thank you very, very much.
We appreciate all your good ideas. So thanks for bringing those forward. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Yes. All right. So this is the same one. Yeah. All right. So, Senator Carlson, why don't we just start off the top? With you have 2 amendments, an A1 and an A2. Can we go ahead and move those? And Mr. Greenfield has a slight modification to the A1.
Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Carlson, the A1 amendment makes mostly technical changes, including our favorite hobby horse of shalls and musts. Of note, in Section 2, the language is broken out a little bit different. But it does not substantively change the requirements for officers who report accidents and the requirements of those reporting requirements to the Commissioner of Public Safety. I will note that the oral amendment to the A1 needs to occur in paragraph E on page 1, line 30. There is a reference to the definition of a commercial motor vehicle. I use the incorrect definition of commercial motor vehicle for that in the reporting. Accident reporting section pertaining to commercial motor vehicles, there is a specific definition that's a little bit broader. So we want to bring that definition in specific to commercial motor vehicles. Long story short, on page 1, line 30, we should delete section 169.011, and then it wraps down onto page 1, line 31, subdivision 16. And the statutory reference on the A1 should be section 169.783, comma, subdivision 1, comma, paragraph, paren A, close paren. And then it will pick the comma back up on page 1, line 31. So the oral amendment would be on page 1, line 30, delete 169011 and insert 169783, comma.
You're looking at a slightly different A1.
I apologize. I think I have the incorrect amendment. So I think it's still the same. Mr. Chair and members, so if you're looking at the amendment for the 1139A1, it's still the same statute that we need to substitute in paragraph what is now C as opposed to paragraph E.
This is different too.
And this is then brought up into paragraph D. Again, this I believe this provision could be cleaned up. I think I'm looking at the incorrect amendment. So, okay. So I apologize. We're going to undo what I just said. If you turn to page 2, on paragraph D, there is a reference to commercial motor vehicle. I'm operating off the amendment. time 11:39 a.m. And on page 2, line 1, we need to delete 169011, subdivision 16, and insert 169783, subdivision 1, paragraph A.
All right. So Senator Carlson moves the A1 amendment with the changes described by Mr. Greenfield. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right. And then we have an A2 amendment. Comment. Senator Carlson moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right. Now the bill is in the shape that the author would like. Please proceed, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Council, for getting through all of these complicated changes here. I appreciate it. This requires a driver of a vehicle involved in a collision that only results in property damage to report the collision to a peace officer. In addition to the existing requirement that the driver must take reasonable steps to report the collision to the property owner and must make an accident report. With us here, to be brief, I have Mr. Paul Assen, who is the executive director of
Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Hansen, sorry. Mr. Hansen. Okay. Executive director of the crash.
Office of Traffic Safety.
Office of Traffic Safety, yes.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Hansen. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the Department of Public Safety's Office of Traffic Safety. And Senator Carlson, thank you for bringing the legislation forward. What we're looking at here is a technical correction to the crash reporting statute as it applies to law enforcement when a motor vehicle collision does occur. I believe it was 2 years ago, there was action in section 169.09 where we cleaned up and eliminated the need for the citizen crash report. That had been a legacy administrative report that had been around for several decades, but really served no purpose anymore. And it placed really an undue administrative burden on drivers who were involved in a motor vehicle collision. One of the unintended consequences of repealing that particular requirement was the language that defined when a peace officer is required to file a police crash report with the Office of Traffic Safety using the MnCrash system. And so it created quite a bit of confusion across the law enforcement community across the state as far as when their officers were supposed to be writing that crash report and submitting it to the Office of Traffic Safety. Some agencies adopted an injury-only report threshold. And what that does is it really shorts us on the critical data that we use in order to identify trends in crashes, causes of crashes, and then to use that data to develop the countermeasures that will prevent those crashes from happening in the first place. So what we're simply doing now is reinstating a requirement for law enforcement to write that crash report when there is what is considered disabling damage to a motor vehicle. So a crash occurs, simply for whatever reason, the vehicle cannot be moved from the scene under its own power. That is what would trigger a crash report by a law enforcement officer. There's also some additional requirements for drivers to ensure that they report a collision that involves damage to something perhaps adjacent to the roadway or an unoccupied vehicle or something like that. Some of the stuff is already included in 169.09, but this just simply clarifies it and provides a bright line that law enforcement can apply when they need to write that crash report that, again, OTS really depends on for the statistical information that we use for the data analysis. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 3817? All right. Members, questions, comments, or amendments? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that just brings up a question. So with property damage, and I know on the freeway, I call them shredder strips, but the safety barriers. So if someone has a hits into a traffic barrier like that, causes damage, no other cars involved, they pull away. So do they have to file a report, or who files a report on that instance? And then second question is, do they have to pay for that property damage?
Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski, very good question. And really, the first answer is the onus to report that collision is on the driver involved in that crash. Those center median cable barriers are expensive. And not that I want to speak for my partners at MnDOT, but yes, they do try and recoup those costs when they have to go out and replace those cable median barriers. If there's any injury involved, then that crash must be reported immediately by the soonest means possible. If there's property damage only, that driver could conceivably drive away, and it may in fact be actually safest if they're able to drive away, but they have to report that crash to law enforcement within a given period of time. I believe it's 24 hours, but I'd have to check the current 16909 for that. But this is a way to protect the taxpayer dollars or the owners of private property that may be damaged because it is on or near that right-of-way where a collision may have occurred and caused that damage.
I remember Senator Jasinski, what's a long story, but my niece, I loaned my car to her. She had just gotten her driver's license. She crashed it like on her first outing and creamed one of the boulevard trees. And so we were informed that if that tree were to die, we have to pay for its replacement. So it was about three houses away from where she lives. So I kept an eagle eye on that tree for years, and it's completely healed over and is still standing, and I didn't have to pay for a replacement tree. All right. Anything further, members, on Senate File 3817? Does this get laid over? All right. So with that, final word, Senator Carlson.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And thank you, Mr. Chair, especially for rescuing me from the Judiciary Committee.
All right. All right. So with that, we will lay Senate File 3817 over as amended for possible consideration in a future omnibus bill. All right, so members, I think that is everything on the list. All right, we did great. All right, done early, awesome. We're gonna huddle and put together the omnibus. It'll be posted tomorrow sometime, and Senator Jasinski will be in touch. All right, with that, we are adjourned.